to Local Matters, the weekly news podcast from Mountain Express. This is Margaret Williams, managing editor and news person, and I'm joined today by our environmental reporter, Susan Andrew, who has the cover story this week, coming week. She'll be talking about hidden hazards. Tell us a little bit about the story you've been working on for some months.
There are 50 inactive hazardous waste sites in Buncombe County. We kind of want folks to know about them because they tend to lie hidden, and when you look at the points on the map, you realize that most of us are kind of neighbors to one of these places.
And what do you mean by inactive hazardous waste sites?
There are numerous types of hazardous releases in our county, some of them by agencies that are operators that are permitted to do so, but then there's a group that are sort of hidden and not permitted to do so, and they tend to languish without any agency that is monitoring or assessing or cleaning up, and those are the ones that fall under the jurisdiction of the inactive hazardous sites branch at Diener State.
And what are some of the sites that you found out a few things about?
Well, the one that we lead off the story with is found in a wooded corner of the Department of Justice Juvenile Detention Center out there in Swannanoa. It's presently enclosed in a 6-foot chain link fence. But until very recently, it was anybody could walk in there. There was no fence there. And there's Owen High School is nearby. Their track team has a jogging trail that skirts the perimeter of this area, and it has a 4-H camp on its northern border. So when hazardous metals and arsenic and DDT and other contaminants were found in the soil and the stream, it became clear that some remediation was going to be necessary. But since the agency really doesn't have a lot of money or a lot of staff, remediation can be a long ways out in the future, and so abatement consists of a fence and a sign.
And in the case of that site you mentioned in Swannanoa, that is, as far as we know, has nothing to do with the juvenile center or Owen High School.
That's right. The ownership is part of the state. That juvenile detention center is state property, but the neighbors naturally were concerned. It was the 4-H camp director who actually found some solid waste protruding from the soil in an old dump site there, so she alerted the state, and abatement consists so far of the fence.
And what are some other of the sites that you looked at?
On the list of 50, of course, we have covered CTS in some detail.
And that's the site that's on Mills Gap Road. It's been covered extensively by Express, and the Citizen Times had a story a few weeks ago about that site.
But the Hyman Young Greenhouse, the former Tycar Chemical Company, now occupied by Biltmore Flooring, several other sites, I think we'll be addressing some of profiling three or four or five members of this list at a time in the coming weeks. We'll kind of show everybody what we know, what the state knows about what's going on in these places.
In some cases they do, in some cases they don't know where the contamination came from.
That's right. It's the assessment is in lots of different degrees of development at these places, and the state often doesn't know exactly what's going on or how far it has spread. And so, you know, folks who want to know more about these sites, if you're a neighbor, information really has to be gleaned by calling the Inactive Hazardous Sites branch in Raleigh or actually visiting there and looking in their files, because none of those files are kept locally, and Buncombe County really knows almost nothing about what's going on at these sites.
And you had to get most of the information you had to get from Raleigh. There's no local
agency.
No one locally is really, as you say, keeping a watch or has the documents needed to look into this.
That's right. It's really a public information issue, too, this story.
When you first ask about it, they said, well, come to Raleigh and look at everything, which seemed
not easy for most people to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And who was there? In my mind, I recall that there was one particular Buncombe County resident who brought this to our attention, and that was John Payne, who's a resident in South Asheville.
He's a resident in Weaverville, and he has family, quite a few family members that live adjacent to the CTS property there in South Asheville. So he made it his business to learn a little bit about some of the inactive hazardous sites in Buncombe. And, you know, as he put it, people are digging holes in the ground and dumping whatever. And neighbors and others who may be affected just have no clue.
Because there's also, as I recall, some limits, or it's not clear what the notifications are or should be for especially private well owners. Folks in the public water system get notified when there's even a spill that's it's known about at all, but not private well owners. And you talked to Hope Taylor some at the Clean Water Trust Fund.
Talked to her a little bit. Also talked to folks at the county who confirmed that at least 50% of Buncombe County residents are still drinking well water. So it's going to be an issue for folks if they live next to one of these sites, because contamination can travel far once it gets into the groundwater. And if you're drinking out of that aquifer, you might want to take a look into what's going on.
Now, you say aquifer in kind of a loose term. We don't have those in the same manner that you would be describing an aquifer in Florida, for example.
That's right. We're talking about the underground bedrock aquifers, fractured bedrock under this entire area, which is where well water drinkers are getting their water. Groundwater.
Mm-hmm. And there's also another story this week, I believe we mentioned it a few weeks ago, about the bees that's in the Green Scene column coming up, and has been on, the story has already been online. Tell us a little something about that.
This is one of those great crossover stories where, you know, the arts and culture and restaurants and scientists' area kind of come together. Honeybees have been suffering in about the last decade, and it's not understood completely what's going on as honeybee hives collapse, and you know, there's a lot of factors at play there. But Friends of Honeybees is a national campaign with a local presence that is enlisting 100 area residents in Western North Carolina, restaurants in Western North Carolina, to get involved in raising money, doing something good for the bees. And there are a lot of interesting pieces to it, and it includes Friends of Honeybees working with local restaurants to list on their menus the locally produced items that are really owing to the bees for their pollination services, those ecological services that bees provide for free. Here's all the menu ingredients that we'd be missing if we were missing the bees. And there's this beautiful amulet, silver necklace amulet that's been produced. It contains the life's work of a single honeybee, just a few drops of honey, and the campaign Friends of Honeybees views it as a launching point for conversations. It's a conversation starter about what's going on with the bees, and they're trying to put these on local servers in the restaurants and getting the conversation rolling about how to raise money, how to save the bees.
And you can find that story online at www.mountainx.com. Well, thank you, Susan, for joining us today, and look forward to the story coming out next week, January 12th.
Have a good week, everybody.
Joining me in the Mountain Express News Studio is Jake Frankel, staff reporter, who's been hanging out and figuring out what those county commissioners are up to. They had a meeting just recently, and you're getting ready to do the report for us.
Yeah, I was in the commissioner chambers this Tuesday, where they actually kind of dove headfirst into business. It was their first meeting of the year, and a lot happened, starting out with they heard a report from county staff saying that they had serious concerns with the safety of a huge retaining wall in Reynolds. It's right along Highway 74 there.
Yes, I saw some pictures about that. Our staff photographer, Jonathan Welch, went out there, and those are some cracks.
Yeah, the cracks are very noticeable. Some of them are up to 3 inches wide, and the structure itself is about 88 feet tall, so that could be seriously dangerous if that was to collapse. Now, the engineer, Matt Stone, who had been overseeing the project for the county, said that he doesn't think it's in imminent danger of falling, but he's concerned enough to where they placed a stop work order on the project to keep the developer from working on it anymore until they study it and get a better sense of exactly what's going on.
Sounds good. And what else did commissioners talk about?
Well, they also passed a new workforce rental housing incentive policy. This is something that's been in the works for several months. They had been talking about it at last month's work retreat, and they were hoping to get it passed, and they did. Now, what this is going to do is, what they want it to do anyway, is to encourage developers to build apartment developments that will be affordable to, say, just kind of mid to lower paid workers, such as nurses and policemen and us, actually.
Us.
Yeah, exactly. So,
was this one of the top one of the things they brought up at their retreat?
Yeah, this was
top priority.
This was a top priority for the year, and so therefore they went ahead on January 4th, the first meeting of the year, and got it done. It'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. The reason why they kind of put it on the fast track originally was because the developer of this proposed Montford Commons apartment complex had asked for incentives to build this really big workforce housing development over on Hillside Street.
Mm.
Interestingly enough, the developer, Vince Smargesi, who I talked to after they passed this policy, said that he's not exactly sure how it's going to play out because there's some major differences between the policy the county passed and the policy the city passed. So he's glad they did it. He wants the incentives, but he has some concerns about whether it's really going to benefit them.
We should take a look at that.
Yeah, we'll definitely
see what the differences are.
Definitely.
You've also been keeping up with a little bit of kind of national news. Representative Heath Shuler, as you're rounding up the news for the beat.
Yeah, he fulfilled his campaign pledge he made starting last summer when he first announced at the SIBO luncheon that we were at that if he was faced with the choice of voting for Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House, then he would instead vote for himself.
And he did.
And he did. He stood up there and on the floor of the House of Representatives under tremendous amount of pressure to give in to his party and vote for Nancy Pelosi. He stood up and voted for himself, as did 10 other of his fellow representatives, which...
They voted for him, not for
voted for him,
yes.
Which is not a lot, but it actually is, I guess, more people than have ever bucked their party on that vote for the last 90 years. And that's certainly what Shuler's been hoping to point out, and it's been interesting seeing all this national press he's been getting. A lot of people have been following that storyline, although some people have said, you know, come on, this guy's a doofus. He had no chance of winning, and he stood up there and voted for himself anyway. So
Shuler for president in 2012?
He has high aspirations, you know. He has a political action committee he just started that he's hoping will continue to raise his national profile. He has his campaign office open permanently now, so we'll have to see what the future has in store.
Thanks, Jake, for joining us here in the studio.
All right. Thanks, Margaret.
Look forward to seeing those stories. Thanks for listening to Local Matters. Catch you next time. Thank you.